Okay. For those of you who have been studying Tanakh with us, today's class is not going to be a Tanakh class. It's a Pesach class, and I really want to deal with one of the big issues related to how we conduct the Seder. And there's a lot of different moving parts to it, but they all come together in one basic thesis. And that's what I want to share with you today. So I'm going to be working off a source page, which you have in the link in the chat. I'm going to share the screen on the computer as well. There are a lot of sources, and they're translated into English as well. If you are less familiar with the texts and the style of working off of text, that's okay. You can just sit back and listen. You'll get as much out of it. I am going to work off the text for the sake of to kind of keep us all kind of guiding to get going together, walking together through the same path. But the basic question that I want to pose in this discussion, in this share, is the following. There are, as we know, many things we do at the Seder that are designed to encourage our children to ask questions. Q&A, question and answer, is the core of how we conduct the Seder. Magid is through questions and answers and dialogue. And we all know this. We conduct our Seders that way. We ask questions. We get answers. Our children ask questions. We provide answers, etc. There are, however, not so much in the Magid section. I'm not dealing with Magid today. Today I want to deal with all of the preliminary things that we do at the Seder between Kiddush until we get to Magid. There are a lot of things that we do that are described in the halacha as primarily designed to encourage our children to ask questions. They're designed to provoke. This is out of the ordinary. Why are we doing it this way? Type of question. The problem with anything that we do for the sake of provoking a question, if all I'm doing is changing the routine for the sole purpose of getting our kids or somebody else to say, hey, why did you change the routine? Why are you doing this? The question immediately becomes, what am I going to answer to that question? The question of why needs an answer. And if the answer is simply, well, we did it this way so that you would ask the question, then we haven't provided an answer. And so that's the core question I want to address. And we're going to spend the bulk of today's class, about 40, 45 minutes, going through all the examples in the Seder that revolve around this question or this issue. And then the last 15 to 20 minutes, what I hope to provide you with is an answer or an approach to answering all of these questions together. So that's my goal. If anybody is interested in where this material is culled together and came together, there's a magnificent article. It's in Hebrew, so you need to be fluent in Hebrew for it. But there's a magnificent article by Mordechai Breuer. I put the footnote to it on the first page in a book that he wrote called Pirkei Mo'adot. And he sort of, in a much more comprehensive manner, addresses this question. So from that introduction, we're going to jump right in. I can't really look at the chat while I'm teaching, so you'll forgive me. We'll hopefully be able to spend a few minutes at the end with Q&A. So we're going to jump right into a shared screen. And anybody see the screen? You should have the link to this if you want to print it out and have it for yourself as well. The first two pages, essentially, I put the primary sources. This is a series of Mishnayot, a series of primary Mishnas that go through in the last parak of Masechet Pesachim that goes through the order of the Seder. We're familiar with some of it. The Manishtana is here, the text of the Manishtana, and we're going to look at this material as well. The second source is the Rambam's description of the order of the Seder, which is going to be relevant to us, and then the Shulchan Aruch in the same fashion. So those are the first three sources, and then we'll get into the rest of it. Starting with the beginning of the Mishnah identifies the sequence of the Seder night. And this is where we're going to just start from. Mazgula Kos Rishon, we start with the first cup, of course, Kiddush. The next Mishnah, Heviu Lefanav, they bring it before him. Now, you can immediately ask, who's the him and who's the what? But I'm not going to go there yet. We'll see. Hevi'u lefanav. They bring it before him. Mitabel b'chazeret. He takes the lettuce with a mara and dips with it. Ad shemegia lepaperet apat. Till he reaches the breaking of bread or the eating of bread. Hevi'u lefanav. They bring it before him. Matzah, chazeret, which is mara, charoset, shnei tafshilin, two different cooked dishes. And when the Beit HaMikdash stood, they would bring the Korban Pesach as well. Mazgula kosheni, they pour the second cup. The Kana ben Shoel, and here the son asks the questions. And if the son doesn't have the knowledge to ask, then the father teaches him. And of course, the four questions, Manishtana halayla hazem, mikol halaylot, why is this night different? And he asks the questions. I'm not going to go through them now. We're all familiar with them. He asks a question about matzah. He asks the question about maror. He or she asks the question. Now, this third one is interesting because in the Mishnah, they had the Korban Pesach. So the third question in the time of the Mishnah is different than our third question. Here it says that in all other nights, we could eat meat, roasted, stewed, boiled, tzli, shaluk, mevushal, but on this night only roasted because of the Korban Pesach. And of course, the two times that we dip instead of just once, and the father teaches him, and then we tell the story of Magid Doresh Mi'arami Over Davi. We expound the portion of the verses of Magid until the end. Okay, so let's start with the first question. Gemara identifies the notion of things that we do for the sake of getting our children to ask questions, primarily in two places. The first is in this phrase, Hevi'u lefanav. They bring before him. What are they bringing? So Rashi suggests they're bringing just the maror, because that's what he's dipping, right? The vegetable, metabo b'chazeret. The Gemara didn't have a karpas that we have. Gemara had two times that you ate maror. So you ate one kind of maror and then you ate another, or you ate the same maror twice. We've replaced that maror with what we call karpas or a vegetable. But nonetheless, the dipping here is that's important. And they would bring it before him. So Rashi says they would bring just the yerek, just the vegetable. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that what they brought was the entire table. Mevi'in shulchan aruch. They brought a set table. Maror and vegetables and matzah and charoset and the korban pesach, everything, the whole table, all the food was all brought. And then the Mishnah continues and says, if you lefanav matzah chazeret v'charoset, they would bring the matzah, the chazeret, the charoset, the two types of food, including the korban pesach. And so there's an immediate question, which is, how many times did they bring this to the table? Are they bringing it once or they're bringing it twice? Hevi'u lefanav, and then hevi'u lefanav. They bring it again. So this is the source for the Gemara's discussion, and I'm going to leave this here. I have it on two separate tabs, so we can just jump. Gemara asks the question. Actually, you know what? Gemara's going to make an assumption. What's the solution to the fact that there's two times that we bring? If we're bringing the same thing twice, what must I have done in between the two times that I bring this to the table? I must have, at some point, removed it from the table. In other words, they bring, in our case, what we call the plate with the food on it, or the plate with the matzah and the maror, what we call the Seder plate, in our context, that's how the Shulchan Aruch describes it, to the Rambam, that was actually the whole meal. They would actually eat on individual tables. And so they would bring the whole table to each person. They would bring their table full of food and then they would take it away. And they would immediately or at some point or another bring it back. So that's the Gemara's assumption, that if I'm bringing something to the table twice, I must have at some point removed it. So that's what the Gemara says. V'lama okrinat ha-shulchan. This is the Gemara on this Mishnah. Why do I remove the table? If I'm bringing it, why do I have to remove it and then bring it back? Amre debe Rabbi Yanai, so they taught in the name of Rabbi Yanai, kidei shiyakiru tinokot v'ishalu, so that our children should see this odd behavior. I bring the table, then I take it away, then I bring it back, and ask questions. This is one of the two places in the Gemara where the Gemara specifically identifies this practice of doing things for the sake of asking questions. So two primary ones, and then there are a couple of additional examples. Abaye, then the Gemara tells a story. Abaye haviyatav kamed de Rabba. Abaye was sitting together with Rabba. And he saw the kamadle taka mikameh. He saw Rabba remove the table from before him, full of food, full of the matzah that they haven't eaten yet, and the mora that they haven't eaten yet. And they brought this thing, and then they took it away. And Amule, who he said to Abaye, Adayin lo ka'achim achlinan, we haven't eaten yet. Atu akre taka mikaman, and you're already taking away the table? What are you doing? I haven't eaten yet. So if you remember the Seder, in our practice is we take the Seder plate, at some point or another, and we remove it, and then we bring it back. Right? There are various customs as to when we remove it, when we bring it back. But that's essentially what the Gemara here is referring to. It says Rabbah to Abaye, to Abaye was sitting before Rabbah. He saw Rabbah remove the Seder plate. So Abaye asked, oh, wait, we haven't eaten yet. Amale Rabbah. So Rabbah said back to him, oh, tartan milamar manishtana. You have exempted us from the need to ask the manishtana. If the whole purpose of the manishtana is to ask questions, you've asked the best question of all. Why uproot the table just to bring it back? And so that's exactly the scenario. Now, again, there's various opinions as to when we bring the table back and what this table includes. The Rambam says it's the whole meal with all of the food on it. The Shulchan Aruch says that it's just the Seder plate. But we bring it back for the sake of, we take it away for the sake of our children to ask questions. And so exactly what the Shulchan Aruch writes. The Shulchan Aruch writes that Yitzavel Hasiram, that the placement here is different than the Rambam, but that's okay. After we do it, Halach Manya, says Yitzavel Hasiram Mi'al Shulchan, you should, the Balas Hagod, the person leading the Seder, should tell the people around them to remove the table and to put them, the Seder plate, somewhere else, either off the table or the side of the table. Ke'ilu kvar achlu, as if we've already eaten. Kidei she'iru atinokot v'yishalu, for the sake of the children should ask, hey, we haven't eaten yet. Why are we removing the Seder plate? So when we remove the Seder plate, it's important that the children stand there and they have their jaws open and say, wait a second, you brought the table and you removed it. Now, in our case, we have this little tiny Seder tray with the matzah and the mara and little samples of it. So they don't really see that we've removed the table. But in the Rambam's description of it, they literally would bring all the food for the whole meal. And then they would whip it away. And so then already you can understand the question. What are you doing? Says the Gemara, that's it. Well, you know, and in fact, the notion of removing the table actually has an interesting source. There is a notion in general, it has nothing to do with Pesach. In the laws of Brachot, that when you finish eating and you're ready to bench, they used to eat on individual tables. So before Berkat HaMazon, they would remove the table. And they would clean the space, and then they would wash Amayim Achronim, and then they would bench. So I get it if we've eaten, but if we haven't eaten yet, why are we removing the Seder plate? Why are we removing the table only to bring it back? So the answer is, says the Gemara, to encourage our children to ask questions. And so Tosfot expresses exactly that idea. Akirata Shulchan hi kadeshi shala ben, the purpose of removing the table is so that our children should ask the question. The question, of course, that I want to ask is, okay, so we removed the Seder plate, and the child asks why we removed the Seder plate. What are we going to answer? So what's the answer to that question? The answer to that question is, we only removed the Seder plate so that you would ask why we removed the Seder plate. I'd like to see the child to whom that is a satisfactory answer. Oh, we only did this so you'd ask the question. Okay, I asked the question, so what's the answer? Now, that's part of the mystery of this whole discussion. And in fact, the Maharal already picked up on this problem, and the Maharal tries to give some sort of an answer. Okroha shulchan, you remove the table, kadesha tinok, sheyitmaha tinok, so that the child should sit in dismay and ask, Lamo kinu shulchan, why did we uproot the table? We haven't eaten yet. We should first eat and then remove the table. And the yeshivlo will answer. What are we going to answer? So Mar Mal says that we have to tell him, ki yesh lanu lisaper b'yitziyat Mitzrayim kodam achila. You're right, we should eat. But we have a much bigger and more important task here than eating, and that is to tell the story of Yitziyat Mitzrayim. So we're not eating because we have to tell the story of Yitziyat Mitzrayim. So I removed the plate in order to get you to ask the question why we brought the plate to remove it. And I'm telling you that the answer is because we have to do Sipur Yitziyat Mitzrayim Magid before we eat. Okay? Well, we could have achieved the same thing by not bringing the table in the first place. If we don't bring the table in the first place, there's no question as to why we bought the table. Then we removed it. We bought the table just because we haven't bought the table because we're not ready to eat. We are going to do Magid first. So this is where the mystery begins. And it's this kind of circular conversation that we're going to see multiple times in the discussion. So just to quick recap on this first example, we start with Kiddush, Masku. This is the language of the Mishnah on the right-hand column. These are the three parts of the Seder familiar to us from the order of the Seder, Kaddish, Karpas, etc. We're going to use those to figure out where we are in the Seder. So Mazgul Lokos Rishon, we pour the first cup of wine, we say Kiddush, we're good with that. I don't have any issues with starting the Seder with Kiddush. Then the Mishnah says, Heviu Lefanav, we bring the table before the guests, either the whole table with all the food or just Mora, says Rashi. We dip the maror, we dip, our custom is to dip karpas, the Rambam, the Gemara had to, we actually dip maror first, we maror twice, but nonetheless, we dip it, first dipping. And then, the Gemara says, we take the table away. Why do we take the table away? So that the children should ask why we brought the table only to take it away. Then we bring it back. Again, some discussion as to when we bring it back, before Manishtana, before Megamlio. Okay, not our issue for now. We pour the second cup, and we're good to go. What steps in the Seder are missing in this sequence? I have so far identified Kaddish, Karpas,
Orchats.
Orchats and Yachats. Right? Orchats and Yachats. Washing without making a bracha and eating and dividing the middle matzah. So we have to get to those two parts of this sequence. Let's spend a little bit of time talking about karpas for a second. I've already identified the fact that in the Mishnah, karpas was actually maror. So they would eat maror twice. They would dip with the maror as part of a first course, if you will. And then they would eat maror later as part of the meal. So in our case, we've replaced the maror with some sort of non-maror vegetable, kind of avoid the issue. But the Mishnah had actually the notion that they ate the maror twice. So Mishnah predates the change to as a regular vegetable. Based on the fact that the Mishnah assumes we're eating maror, the Gemara asks the following question. Now, this is the Gemara, again, the Gemara Psachim, Amr Ish Lakish. From the fact that we eat maror twice, we say the bracha bar pri adama the first time, and then we recite the bracha on the maror the second time. So the first time we're eating maror, not for the sake of maror, but for the sake of just a vegetable of some kind. Says the Gemara, Zot omeret mitzvot tzrichot kavana. From here we learn that I cannot fulfill a mitzvah unless I have the intent to fulfill a mitzvah. This is a huge machloket in all of Ishas, beyond the scope of this discussion for today. The question of whether or not I have to have intent to fulfill a mitzvah in order to fulfill a mitzvah. If I pick up a lulav without having in mind that I want to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav, do I fulfill the mitzvah? It's a machloket and it's a major dispute. So the Gemara says, from the story of the maror twice, I can derive maybe one side of this debate because I'm not eating maror at the time that I'm obligated to eat maror. I'm making a bar pri adama. And so I'm eating maror and I'm not having in mind to fulfill the mitzvah. I'm just eating it for the sake of the bracha, for the sake of a vegetable. Says the Gemara, wait a second, maybe I'm having in mind to fulfill the mitzvah of Mara. So Gemara says, Hilkach b'ilei mahadil atbulin l'shem mara. I have to repeat the dipping of mara and eating of mara later on to show that this first eating of mara was not for the sake of mara. If that's, because if I don't assume that, why do I need to dip twice in the first place? I'm eating mara twice. So Gemara says, wait a second. Maybe your assumption is incorrect. Maybe mitzvot really don't need intent. And this to the question of why do we dip the mara and eat mara twice, once before magid and once during the meal, the answer is, so that the children should look at this and say, hey, wait a second, we're not eating it. Why are we eating mara? Why are we eating mara twice? Why are we eating mara now before the meal? We're going to eat mara again after the meal? What's going on here? So the assumption in this Gemara is that it's the second dipping that is the question. Rashi assumes that the question is relevant to the first eating as well. The first tibur that we dip the mara and eat it the first time. He says, what are you doing? What are you eating it for? What's the purpose of karpas? Let's start the question differently. Basic question. What's the purpose of karpas? How does karpas work? We're going to take a vegetable. In our case, because of to solve some of the complexities here, we eat a vegetable that's not mara. We're going to make a bracha bar pri adama. We're going to dip it. What kind of vegetable do we use? I could poll the crowd. We could see how many different people use different kinds of vegetables. I bet you there are 71 people on this call. I bet you we'll get 50 different answers to what vegetable to use. Anything but mara. Okay. We dip the vegetable. We eat. How much do we eat? Only a small amount. Pachas mikazai. Right? We eat a small amount. We don't want to eat too much because we don't want to say bracha achrona. We don't want to have to bench. We don't want to eat, but we have to eat something to make a bar pri adama. Why do we do all of this? So the Gemara says, so the children should ask questions. What question is the child asking? She's asking, wait a second, we're not eating the meal yet. We're not eating the meal yet. What are you eating karpas for? What are you eating mara for? What are you eating a vegetable for? And that's exactly how the Torah presents it. You take a vegetable, you say the bracha by a pri adama, and you dip it into, in the Gemara's case, the Mishnah, you dip it in charos. Our custom is to dip it into salt water. So that the children should ask questions. All right. So I'm sitting at the table. We're finished Kaddish. We'll get to Urchatz in a second. Take the vegetable, the karpas, we dip it into the salt water where we dip it into the chavoset. We say the bracha bar pri adama, and our child stands there and he says, why are you having a vegetable? And we answer, oh, great question. We're eating karpas because we want you to ask why we're eating karpas. And the child says, okay, I asked why we're eating karpas. And you answer, because we want you to ask why we're eating karpas. That's not going to go anywhere. So I come to the same question. If all I'm doing is changing the sequence for the sole purpose of encouraging the question, I don't have an answer to the question. So this, again, the same way the Maharal picked this up on the issue of removing the Seder plate and returning it, the Bach, Rabbi Yoel Sirkis, one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch and on the Torah, also picked up this same issue. And he suggests the following. And again, it's a partial answer. We're going to look at it from a slightly different perspective. Partial answer, he says, why do we recite eat karpas? Hatshuvah tinokotu, the answer to the child will be, dahatibu shekodem asudah hu derech cherut. When we eat the vegetable before the meal, we're eating it in the manner of free men, free people. Meaning, k'derech b'nei chorin shemat bilin kodem asuda. We eat, we're free, we're not slaves. When we eat a meal, we always dip and eat a first course vegetable before the rest of the meal. Lamshich tavat machal, to encourage the appetite, to whet the appetite. Hence the term, somebody throw it out there, hence the term, whet the appetite. Hence the term
appetizer.
That's what an appetizer is. An appetizer is a first course you have before the main course to whet the appetite. Ken katvu tzat mefreshim. The linear, says the Bach, it would seem to me that the answer is that we haven't yet gotten to the meal. Lefi shadayin lo yigiyah zman asuda. And therefore, we have to recite the Agada and all of Magid first. And we're, for that, we're in for a long haul. The Be'in of the Mimra, Tchila Agadato Vahelel. We have to say Halo, Agat, Magid, and Halo. Therefore, Anu Matbilin Achshav, therefore, we dip the first maror, we dip the first vegetable into the salt water. Are you ready for this? The Ti'ima Ba'alma, to taste something, Lifnei Suda, before the meal. So that we shouldn't leave all of that time without anything to eat. We're hungry. So because we're hungry, we're going to eat something before the meal. Okay? So how does this work? We're all hungry. We're sitting at the Seder. We're going to eat something as the first course before the meal. So first of all, according to this, it's a very logical, rational explanation. Right? We're eating a first course. How many of us have a salad before we have a main course? Go to a fancy meal. The first course is a salad. So that's what the karpas is. It's a first course salad. Says the Bach, it's normal. That's what you do. You have a first course to either to encourage the appetite, to whet the appetite, or to give us something to hold us over, like hors d'oeuvres, until we have the main course, like hors d'oeuvres before the wedding. But if that's true, then it's very logical to have a salad before the main course. It's very logical to have hors d'oeuvres or to have a pre-meal meal. Why am I doing it just for the child to ask a question? More importantly, and this is really the question, if it's, right, so if it's normal, what's the change in our practice? But more importantly, how much do we eat of this karpas? I don't know about you, but a little tiny sliver of half a cucumber is not going to cut it, pardon the pun. It's not going to hold me over until the Seder. I'm not going to be satisfied Can you imagine going to a fancy meal, Derech Eretz, and getting a salad? And the salad is half a slice of cucumber, razor thin. So it's less than a kazayit, because you can't eat more than a kazayit. But that's supposed to hold us over. That's supposed to whet our appetite. It's an odd practice. That's karpas. So karpas, and then we again eat more in the whole discussion about the bracha, all so that the children should ask questions. We're eating a salad. We're not eating a salad. It's a half a salad. It's a slice of a piece of vegetable. Whet our appetite, not satisfy us. It's a mystery. Okay? Item number three, orchatz. What's orchatz? We wash our hands. But of course, we wash our hands, nitlit yadayim, for what? We're not going to eat matzah. We're not eating matzah until Shulchan Aruch. So we wash our hands for the sake of karpas. Kadesh, I'm doing this out of order, but it's kadesh, urchatz, karpas, yachatz. We'll get to yachatz in a second. So urchatz comes before karpas. Before we eat this vegetable that we've dipped into either the salt water or the charoset, depending on your custom, or, right, whether it's maror, whether it's another vegetable, before we dip this salad or have this salad, we are going to wash our hands. Now, that, in fact, is a halach. It's a fact that we wash our hands before any vegetable, or should, before any vegetable. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Hoshaya, kol shetibula b'mashke, tzarich nitzilat yadayim. Any kind of vegetable that is dipped in liquid requires washing of the hands. Why? So the answer is, this has nothing to do with Pesach, even though it's in Pesachim. And the answer is, this is a law in Tumah and Tara. Laws of Tumah require that the moment I take a vegetable or a fruit that is wet, it becomes susceptible to the laws of Tumah of impurity. My hands are Tameh. I therefore wash my hands to remove the tumah from my hands so that I can eat the fruit or the vegetable without any concern about transferring that tumah to the fruit or vegetable. That's the halach. By show of hands, you want to try the poll. How many of us do this when we have an apple or when we eat any other kind of vegetable any other time of the year? And the answer is we don't. We don't have to. I mean, we wash our hands just to make them clean. But in terms of netilat yadayim, the only time we do netilat yadayim is before bread. We don't do netilat yadayim today for the sake of tuma and tara of our hands as we eat fruit and vegetables. Because the laws of the Beit HaMikdash, the laws of Kohanim, and all of those laws around which it revolves are not relevant. So Tosfot already points this out, that when it comes to the Seder night, nira d'netilat d'hacha, when we wash our hands, lo mishum kedusha v'nikiyut, we're not doing it for the purpose of cleanliness, for the purpose of the sanctuary, as we do by bread. Right? We're not doing this for elam mishum shelo yitameh hamashkin liyot chila, we're doing it for the sake of tumah, so we shouldn't transmit this tumah onto the vegetable. Ulefi zen nira de'en levarach alotan netila. That's why we don't make a bracha on the netila, because it's not required. It's not obligated. The koshekein, anan, we, she'en anu nizarin militamot atzmeinu, we don't today pay particular attention to this kind of, we're not talking about tumat meit, we're talking about just regular kind of casual tumah. We're not particularly careful about it because it has no relevance today without the Beit HaMikdash. Umilachol ochlin tamein, we do not eat food that doesn't become tamein. We don't need to make this netila altogether. And therefore, if you make a bracha, it's certainly a bracha levatala. So he says you don't need to make the bracha. Really, you don't need to wash at all. So with regards to if one is eating food that is in a state of tahara always, they could wash in tlatidayim, even for fruits and vegetables. But we're not makbid on this. And therefore, we should not need to make a bracha. Wait a second. But if we're not makbid on this, then I have a bigger question, which is, why are we doing it? All year long, we never wash netilat yadayim, classic netilat yadayim with a cup, twice in each hand, etc. I'm not talking about keeping your hands clean. That's what Tosfot says. We're not doing this for cleanliness. We're doing this because the custom is, if our hands are wet, they can transmit tumah to the fruit or vegetable. I'm not even going to start with the question of the fact that we pick it up with a fork. We pick it up with a fork. We're not even physically touching it. That's a separate issue. But even if we ate with our hands, what are we doing? We don't practice that kind of netilat yadayim for fruits and vegetables throughout the year. So why should we do so on Pesach night? That's the question. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch writes, in regards to Seder night, Notel Yadav Vatzorach Tibu Rishon, we wash our hands for the sake of this first karpas that we eat, V'lo Yivarech Al HaNetila, and you should not recite the bracha of Netzilat Yadayim. So that not reciting the bracha is, not, it's not so we want to distinguish between this washing and the other washing. It's so we're not reciting a bracha because we're not obligated. And we don't obligate ourselves to wash until to dine for fruits and vegetables throughout the year. So we don't even wash throughout the year at Pesach night. We certainly don't need to make a bracha. But then that begs the question of why wash in the first place? That's the question. Why wash? Then you take karpas, less than a kazayit, we talked about before, and you dip it into, our custom is in salt water, and you make the bracha bar pradam. So to this question, why we wash in the first place, if we are not required to do so, and we don't do so throughout the year, so one of the answers brought down, offered by, in this case, Chok Yaakov, I gave you the biography of all of the, anybody who is not the regular routine, Rashi, Tosfot, Rambam source, I gave you in the footnotes the biography of who's who, so you can look at that on your own time. So the Chok Yaakov says, very simply, the fact that we wash in Tlat Yadayim on this night, it's one of the changes that we do for the sake of encouraging questions. So you're right, we don't need to wash in Tlat Yadayim. We never wash in Tlat Yadayim for fruits and vegetables throughout the year. Pesach night, we're going to wash in Tlat Yadayim for fruits and vegetables. We're not going to make a bracha because we're not obligated to wash in the first place. But we're going to wash. We're going to pretend that we're living in that kind of world in which tumah is relevant and et cetera, and we're going to wash in Tlat Yadayim. Why? So that our children will ask, hey, we never washed in Tlat Yadayim before we eat vegetables. So why should we do it now? And we're going to answer, we wash now, even though we don't wash throughout the year, so that you'll ask why we wash. Okay? So I asked, why we wash? And we're going to answer, because we want you to ask why we wash. And we can go around this, we can go in circles around this forever. But the moment the answer becomes something we do for the sole purpose of encouraging our children to ask questions, I come back to the same foundation, which is there needs to be an answer. And if there's a really good answer that we wash, that would mandate this practice, I don't have necessarily the question of the child to ask. So it's a very circular argument, and we're back to square one. Okay, is everybody with me still? Thumbs up if you're still with me. So we've asked it about urchatz, we've asked it about karpas, we've asked it about the practice of taking the table plate, bringing it back, all of these things we do for the sake of encouraging our children to ask questions. Let's look at one more. Let's look at yachatz. We break the middle matzah. Now, breaking the middle matzah, by the way, is not found in the Mishnah. It's not actually recorded in the Mishnah. It's not in the Gemara either. There doesn't seem to be a Talmudic source for taking the middle matzah or taking one of the matzahs and breaking it. Nonetheless, it's attributed to the statement in the Gemara that says that the bread is called lechem oni, bread of affliction. So the Gemara gives two explanations to the phrase lechem oni. One is lechem she'onin alav tvarim habay, bread about which we say many things. We tell the story of Magid with the bread in front of us. And the other is that it is the bread of the poor man. Right? We refer to poor man's bread, and not necessarily because of the cost of matzah today that makes us poor, but for other reasons, it's called poor man's bread because mat ani shedarko bepusa afkan bepusa. A poor man eats a piece of bread, so to hear a piece of bread, not a full bread. And that's usually the explanation as to why, theoretically, you could come to the table with already a broken matzah. Now, our custom is to take the matzah and break it in the middle of the meal. Now, when we break this matzah is an interesting discussion. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch have different customs as to when we break this bread, this middle matzah, I should say. In the Rambam's explanation of the Mishnah, the Rambam has, after you bring the Seder plate back, Mivarach al Netzilat Yadayim. This is before Magid. Sorry, no, it's by the end. It's by, I correct that. After Rabban Gamliel, after the Bracha Goy Yisrael, you finish Magid. Rambam then says, you wash and collect your daim. And at the time that we do Rachtza, we wash our hands for the second time because we already washed our hands once. And Lokeach Shnei Rikikin, you take two loaves of matzah, Cholek Echad Mehem Umeniach Parus L'toch Shalem. You take half, one of them, you break it, you make the Bracha of Matzlechem in the Aretz, and not, you don't make it over two whole loaves as we do throughout the year because of Lechem Oni. In other words, the Rambam, and this is important to note for the Rambam only had two matzahs. Our custom of three matzahs is not the Rambam. The Rambam had two matzahs, like every other Shabbos Yom Tov meal. But one of them you break. Normally you leave both whole. You have a shalom. This now, you know shalom. You're going to take the middle matzah. You're going to break it. Why do we have three matzahs? We have three because we want to be able to break one and still have two whole for Lechem Mishnah. That's the debate, why we have two or three. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch had a slightly different placement of the story. The Shulchan Aruch does this the way we do it, which is that before Magid, you take the middle matzah and you break it, the middle matzah, because the Shulchan Aruch had three, and you place half of one of you take one half and you give it to somebody at the Seder to hold on to it, to guard it for the Afikomen. That would not fly at my Seder. I would not trust anybody around the table with my Afikomen because that's not going to happen. I'll never get it back. So we played this whole game where we hide it, etc. But nonetheless, and the other one, you what does he do with it? He puts it under the tablecloth, hides it. On the other half, you put between the two. And then you lift up and you say, Yalach Ma'anya, and the rest of the story that we have been discussing. Okay. So you break the middle matzah. Why do we break the middle matzah? According to the Shulchan Aruch, we break the middle matzah when? Actually, not why, when? Everybody agrees why we break the middle matzah. We break the middle matzah so we don't have a shalom. Granted. The question is when? The Rambam was very logical. You break the middle matzah. Sorry, I keep jumping. The Rambam was very logical. You break the middle matzah right before you eat the matzah. That makes sense. The Rambam didn't have enough Afrikoman game of hiding and stealing, etc. The Shulchan Aruch, on the other hand, says, no, you break the middle matzah before Magid. Before Magid. Before the second cup. Well, if you break the middle matzah, what do you do with it? Do you hide half? You put away half? What are you doing? You're breaking the middle matzah. When do we break bread? Before we eat bread, right? You break the bread before you eat it. You cut it, you slice it. If it's bread, if it's matzah, you snap it in half, whatever you want to do with it. But before you eat it, we're not eating it yet. We're putting it away. So this is the question that Beit Yosef asks. Why do it early? And he says the following. Haminhag l'chalka, our custom is to divide the middle matzah before you read the Haggadah in order to be able to say halach ma'anya, because we need to be able to recite the introduction to Magid, which is halach ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread, and we need to have a half a piece. So we break it here so that we can recite halach ma'anya on half a loaf. So it's kadesh urchatzi karpas yachatz, we break it, and then we have half a matzah to be able to recite halach ma'anya. I'm going to come back to the second explanation in a second. V'yeshomim k'dei shelo yu'u v'yochlu ota tocha su'udah b'shogeg. We put it away so that somebody shouldn't accidentally eat it. All right. So before I get to this middle answer, let's just deal with this question of halach ma'anya. We break it here because of halach ma'anya. The truth is, halach ma'anya itself is a bit of a mystery. Why is halach ma'anya itself a bit of a mystery? When do we say halach ma'anya? And this is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt, let all who were hungry come and eat, let anyone who was in need come and observe Passover. This year we are here, next year in Israel. When do we recite this?
At the beginning.
The very beginning, right? So it's an odd moment to invite guests. Forget the fact that we haven't opened the door to invite the guests, but it's an odd moment to invite guests. If they're hungry, we say, oh, we're going to break the middle matzah. We're going to say, halach ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread. If you're hungry, come and eat. Okay, they're hungry. They come in. Let's assume for the moment somebody's standing at the door, hears the invitation, opens the door, comes in, sits down. They're hungry. What are we going to do now? We're going to tell them to wait for 2.5 hours while we finish Magid before we give them food. That makes a lot of sense. If you're inviting them because they're hungry, invite them before Shulchan Aruch. Okay, problem number one. So what's the answer? They're not coming because they're hungry. They're coming because they don't have a seder. Kol d'tzrich. Soloveitchik used to say that kol d'chmin refers to somebody who's hungry, and kol d'tzrich refers to somebody who is in need of Pesach, the mitzvah of the night. So they're in need of the mitzvah of the night. We're going to invite them to include them in the mitzvah. Problem? If they need to be included because they're poor and they're hungry and they don't have a seder, they need to be included before the first cup. They need to be included before Kaddish. How can you not include them in Kiddush? It's one of the four cups. So why isn't halach ma'anya before the Seder? That's a valid question. So Soloveitchik refers to the Korban Pesach. They should come and join the Korban Pesach. We're not eating the Korban Pesach. We're in exile. Hashtacha. We're not having the Korban Pesach. So this whole halach ma'anya is a mystery. Says the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef, the only reason we break the middle matzah now is because of halach ma'anya, which in its placement now is an oddity altogether. Okay, put that aside. The other answer that Beis Yosef gives is, k'dei shiyu hatinokot v'yishalu. I break the middle matzah as one of those things that we do so the child should ask, why are we breaking the middle matzah? We're not eating yet. Adayin lo achalnu. We're not ready to eat. We haven't washed through a tadayim. We have not saying hamotzi. We're taking a matzah. We're pretending we're about to be shul. We're about to make hamotzi. We break it, but we don't give it out. We hide it. And the child sits and says, well, wait a second. If you're not eating it, why did you break the middle matzah? What's our answer? Ah, you asked a really good question. We're not eating it. Why do we break the middle matzah? Okay, what's the answer? The answer was that you'd ask, why are we eating it? Why are we breaking it if we're not eating it yet? I'll go back in circles. All right. The last piece of this before we get to an attempt to answer this question is the second cup of wine. Here's what the Mishnah says. After all of this, what do we have? We've uprooted the table. This is a list of all the things that we do in order to encourage our children to ask questions. We take the Seder table or the food that we brought to the table. We take it away and then we bring it back. Why? So you'd ask the question. We wash our hands without a bracha for the sake of eating a vegetable, which we never do during the year. Why? So that you'd ask the question. We eat karpas before the meal, even though we're going to eat karpas during the meal or maror during the meal. We eat a first course vegetable, even though we're only eating one slice of it. Why? So that you should think it's odd and ask the question. We break the middle matzah now instead of right when we eat it. Why? So you should ask why, and we could ask the question. Finally, we get to the beginning of Maggid. Mazgula Koshini, they pour the second cup of wine. The Khan eventually, and now the child finally is sitting there with their mouth open, their jaw dropping, and they've seen a bunch of things they do not understand. They saw the Seder table come to the table and be pulled away. They saw the meal food come to the table and be pulled away. They saw us washing Tachidayim and then not have bread. They saw us eat a vegetable and not eat a vegetable. They saw us break a matzah. We didn't have to break the matzah. Now they're pouring a second cup of wine. When do you normally pour a second cup of wine? In a regular Shabbos Yontif meal. When do you pour it? Mandated, required to pour a second cup of wine?
Before Birkat HaMazon.
Before Birkat HaMazon. So you're pouring the second cup of wine. What, are you ready to bench? I haven't eaten yet. Not eventually. And now the child opens up his mouth. He sits there, hamum, he is in shock. What's going on? And what does he finally ask? He asks, "Man, ishtana laila zemikol laylot. I don't understand what's going on. Every other night we eat chametz and matzah. Tonight we ate matzah. Every other night we eat vegetables. Tonight we ate maror. Every other night we eat meat, roasted, stewed, boiled. Tonight we eat only korban pesach. We only eat roasted. Every other night we dip once. Tonight we dip twice. I got news for you. Has he eaten matzah yet? No. Has he eaten maror yet?
No.
Has he eaten maror yet? No. Has he eaten the korban pesach yet?
No.
Has he dipped twice yet?
He just saw them. He just saw it.
He didn't see anything. He may have seen them on the table, but he hasn't seen a second dipping. He only saw the first dipping. And he hasn't really, in other words, all the four questions that the Mishnah identifies are things he hasn't seen yet, or he hasn't experienced yet. But the things that he has experienced yet, the removal of the Seder plate, the Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, all the things he has seen, he doesn't ask. So I don't understand this Manishtana. How did Manishtana become said over things that he hasn't seen yet, or experienced yet, where the things that he has experienced, all the things that we've identified so far, we are not included? That's really the greatest mystery of all. So is it just the opportunity now? Now we're going to ask the questions before Maggid, and as the Meiri says, right, if he's a Chacham, he's going to ask about all the things that we saw, including the Okrinat HaShulchan, and we're going to add to that the questions about the Manishtana. We're going to just jump them all together. But the Manishtana he hasn't seen yet.
Rabbi Shlomo?
Yes.
You mentioned before that clearly this has to be from Second Temple times because we're talking about Kulot Zoli. So if that's the case, isn't there a good body of scholarship that states in the Second Temple times the Maggid was said?
Okay, so you're getting to an answer that's, I wouldn't say goodbye, it's a novelty, but yes, you're getting to where we're going next, which is the Mordechai. We'll come to that in a second. But I just want to summarize the question. That's a very good observation. That's really the key answer to all of this, but we're going to come to what you're suggesting in a second. But I just want to summarize the where we're at. Just to understand, the way our Seder operates, There's an illogical assumption. I have all of these oddities that I do, and all of them are designed to encourage children to ask the question why we do them. And to all of them, we don't have an answer because the only reason we do them was to encourage the question. Okay? That's the framework of this discussion. Why we uproot the table, why we wash our hands, why we eat karpas, why we divide the matzah, why we pour a second cup, why the child asks for things he hasn't seen, and of course, why the halach ma'anya is at the beginning of the Seder. So as correctly pointed out here, and forgive me, I wasn't watching the video. I don't know who asked that question, but that's okay. It's correctly pointed out here, and I'm going to skip the Netziv for now. The Netziv asks the question about karpas, about washing our hands, but I want to come to this Mordechai. The Mordechai says something extraordinary. Mordechai was a Risha, very important Risha, and is quoted by the Ramah often. He says the following. He's talking about Korach. Why do we do Korach when we do Korach? Okay? Now, Mordechai is bothered by the fact that we do Korach at the beginning of the meal. Because really, Korach is, we take the sandwich, we're taking matzah, morah, and what did the Hillel do? He took matzah, morah, and the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach had to be eaten al sova. The Korban Pesach wasn't your main meal. It was dessert. That's what we call it, the afikomen. Right? You ate your meal, you were satisfied, then you ate the afikomen, and then you ate the Korban Pesach to demonstrate that you weren't eating the Korban Pesach because you were hungry. You ate the Korban Pesach because it was a mitzvah. So he doesn't understand why Korach is at the beginning of the meal. Korach should be at the end of the meal. K'derech sheyuachlin a Pesach ha-matzot u'morim l'achar ha-suda. They used to do it at the end of the meal. However, since you already started with the mitzvah matzah maror, you're already eating matzah, you're already eating maror, and we don't have a korban pesach. So you ate the matzah maror b'tchilat asuda, so come mitzvah till you finish the mitzvah, because we don't have the korban pesach, we're just doing it zecher lemikdash, as a remembrance. Says the Mordechai, here's the big punchline. B'chein ayan nira l'rabbeinu simcha. Shebizman shebet mikdash kayam, when the Beit Mikdash stood, ayuosin kol haseder achar hasuuda, they would recite the Magid and do all of the components of the Seder after the meal. V'lo ayu ochlin matzat mitzvah, ela lachar shemalu krisan mikemach ubatzeket v'shar dvarim. They would finish the meal, they would have their food, and then they would eat matzah and maror and korban pesach as it's required. However, we, anusha kol sudatenu mimatzah's mitzvah, since our meal is our mitzvah, we don't have a korban pesach. For us, the matzah is the only thing left. So therefore, once we start the meal, kivan shematchilim b'hilchotel, we start all the halachas of the Seder, anu osim mitzvotel zuah chazu b'lo hafsakah. So then we do one thing after another. We do matzah, we do maror, and then we do zecher lepesach of the afikomen by Korach, even though it's still not until the end. Now, if I take what the Mordechai is suggesting for face value for a second, he's suggesting that at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, since the primary mitzvah of the Korban Pesach had to be at the end of the meal, so when did I eat the matzah, the maror, and the Korban Pesach? After the meal was over. Correct? What's the requirement of Magid? The requirement of Magid is b'shash yesh Pesach matzah maror munachem lefanecha, when you have Pesach matzah maror in front of you. So when was Magid? Before the meal or after the meal? The answer is, it had to be after the meal. In other words, that's the b'chiddush of the Mordechai. The entire sequence of the Seder is flipped around on its head because we don't have the Korban Pesach. But when we had a Korban Pesach, they would have the meal first, and then they would have the Korban Pesach, matzah, and maror, and then Magid. Like any Shabbos Yontif meal. And any Shabbos Yontif meal, you make Kiddush, you sit down, you have the meal, and then you start after the main course. You start with Zemiros and Divrei Torah and all kinds of stuff. That's exactly how the Seder looked. You started with Kiddush, you made Hamotzi, then you maybe had a first course salad, then you had Hamotzi, then you had the meal, then you brought out the matzah and the maror and the Korban Pesach, and you had the mitzvahs of the day and the sandwich of the day, and then you had Magid, and you told the story with matzah and maror sitting in front of you. It's exactly what Rabban Gamliel says. What happened after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? At some point or another, unclear when, they realized that without the Korban Pesach, what's the primary mitzvah d'oraisa? The primary mitzvah d'oraisa is now Magid. Magid, matzah, and mar. At least Magid and matzah. So if that's true, it doesn't pay to wait till the, right, to delay the Magid until the end of the meal, puts the primary mitzvah at the end. So that's not appropriate. So at that point, Magid was moved to prior to the meal. Let me show you how this works. In the right-hand column, you have what the Seder looked like in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. You start with Kiddush. Then you brought the food, all the food, as the Mishnah says. And then you washed in Tefillat Yadayim with a bracha, like you're making a motzi. But there was a first-course meal. There was a full salad. First-course, full salad. However, in those days, you washed in Tefillat Yadayim both for vegetables and fruit, as well as bread. So you washed in Tefillat Yadayim once, not twice. You made the bracha of Aron Tefillat Yadayim. You had your first course salad. Then you had your hamotzi, broke your middle matzah, and you had your hamotzi. Then if you wanted to olach ma'anya, because you're about to get to the Korban Pesach at the end of the meal, so you invite people who are hungry. This may have been added later on because it's in Aramaic. So this may have come in later. We'll leave that for now. Well, otherwise we're going to run out of time. Then you had your Shulchan Aruch, including your Pesach and your Matzah and Maror. Then you remove the table, because that's what you finished, right? So you move it an empty table, and you pour the second cup of wine, and you recite the Manishtana. And now the Manishtana is, for Magid, of exactly all the things that the child has seen. Matzah and Maror and Pesach and the second dipping, he's seen it all. And now you can ask the questions. Manishtana, we did all of these strange things. And you can answer the question. And then you recite the third cup of wine for Birkat HaMazon. And hello. Everything's good. Everything's normal. There's not a single hair out of place. What happened after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? At some point or another, they took this entire experience of the Shulchan Aruch and they said, no, we're going to put this after Magid. So they moved it from here to here. Fine. What about everything that was there around the meal? What about the fact that they had yachatz and they had karpas and they had uruchat? All these things were normal. You know what they did? They froze the rest of the Seder in place, intact. They didn't move a single thing. All they did was move Magid. And suddenly, you start with Kaddish, you bring the table before the guests. Then you wash in Tefillat Yadayim, only this time it's only for vegetables, so there's no bracha. Then you recite a vegetable, but you're not going to have the meal, so you only eat a little bit. Then you break the middle matzah, even though you're not going to have hamotzi yet, because that's not coming yet. Right? Then you remove the Seder table, because even though you haven't eaten yet, but in time of the Beit HaMikdash, you did eat. Then you pour the second cup of wine. Now you recite a manishtana for things he's never seen. What's going on here? So what happens? Let's go example by example. What happens by Orchatz? Or let's say take one at a time. Say Kaddish, bring the table plate to the table. You go and you wash in Tefillat Yadayim without a bracha. Kata, why are we washing in Tefillat Yadayim without a bracha? Why are we washing for a vegetable, for karpas? Why are we breaking a middle matzah? We haven't eaten yet. We're not going to eat yet. Why are we taking the Seder table away? What's the answer to every one of these questions? It's the same answer. With one answer, I answer the child's question every single time. And the answer is, here's how it goes. Once upon a time, we had a Beit HaMikdash. And when we had a Beit HaMikdash, we had a Korban Pesach. And when we had the Korban Pesach, which was the primary central motif, mitzvah of the night, everything revolved around the Korban Pesach. And the Korban Pesach was at the beginning of the meal, with matzah and with maror and everything else. And then, but today we don't have the Korban Pesach. So we pushed all of that to the end of the meal. And we left all these things that we do at the beginning of the meal in place. So you should ask why they're there. And we should be able to answer, because they're there from a time when we had a Beit HaMikdash and a Korban Pesach. We no longer have the Korban Pesach And that's why they're out of order. That answer will follow, will work for every one of the questions we asked earlier. The possible exception of Halacha Ma'anya, time is not going to permit me to go into that in detail. That's probably an addition from a later time, but when they still had the order as it was originally with the meal here. Unclear when that was shifted, but in that shift, says the Boyer, the answer to all the questions now comes into play. The answer is a single answer to every one of the questions. They're out of order only because we removed the Korban Pesach from its place at the center of the meal and put it at the end. And Magid now moves to the beginning, so because Magid moves to earlier, all these weird things we used to do at the beginning of a normal Shabbos Yantif meal no longer make any sense because it's now a time without a Beit Mikdash and without a Korban Pesach. So that's, I'm going to stop sharing for a second. That, I think, is, that's the way Reb Boyer presents this, the sequence of the Seder. And it's very compelling to my, in my opinion, humble opinion, doesn't need my haskama. But what's compelling about it is that it gives a real answer to all of these odd practices. They're not just arbitrary things we do because we want our children to ask questions. The things we do, they're out of place. And we left them out of place. That's the Gemara's point. We left them for the questions to be asked. We didn't insert them, change them to encourage our children's questions. We left them exactly where they were. And now they're out of place. So a child asked, why are we washing without a bracha? Well, once upon a time, we had a Korban Pesach. And so we washed, and then we ate, and we had hamotzi. And we washed the time with a bracha, and we washed for vegetables, because that's what you did. And you had a salad, and you had the main course.
Rabbi Shulman?
Yes.
A same person, Yehudi Feldman. Why couldn't, then I think you can explain Halach Ma'anya pretty well then. It given the fact that the Gemara doesn't mention it, we assume it was put in because we've made a change that has to be explained. Why are we starting with the matzah, not with the Pesach? Well, those three lines help you explain that.
Right. And,
That would be how, why it got stuck there.
Right. So that's inserted at a point.
As soon as the matzah comes, you need a little, you look upon it instead of as a main thing, which I know we all do today. But let's make believe that once upon a time that was nothing more than a footnote.
Right. That's exactly it.
According to your suggestion, which is really very, really terrific, but why do we need so many questions to just simply give the exact same answer? At one time we had a Beis HaMikdash, and we had the Korban Pesach, and now we don't.
So here's what I'm suggesting is that these are not practices that our sages instituted in order to each one of them encourage questions. The question is a single question. All the things that we do at the Seder at the beginning of the meal make more sense if we were having the meal now, but we're not. So therefore, we don't understand the Tlit Yadayim, we don't understand Karpas, we don't understand Yachatz, we don't understand Halach Ma'anya, we don't understand the Manishtana, because we're missing the main piece of the story. So it's not like they instituted one by one all these things for the courage and the question. They just kept the snapshot of the Seder exactly as it was. All they did was move, and it wasn't, I'm not even sure it was a conscious decision. They just moved the Korban Pesach to the end, or the meal, I should say, to the end, and left Magid at the beginning. And now all these things are weird. So they said, okay, to all these things that are weird, we're just going to leave them in place. They all encourage the same question, and we're going to give the same answer. We're missing the Korban Pesach. And when we had a Korban Pesach, the order of the Seder was reversed. And let me conclude with the following observation. There's no night in the Seder in the year that is as ordered and structured and sequenced as the order, as the Seder. That's why it's called a
Seder.
Okay. That's why it's called a Seder. The order of the Seder, which is a tautology, but the order of the Seder that we have, Kadesh, Rochatz, Karpas, Yachatz, was written during the time of the Gaonim. Host after all of this. So our order of the Seder, we think, was instituted in accordance with Kadosh Ochatz Karpas Yachatz Makin Vachatz Matz, right? But that song, that whole description is during the time of the Goyim, was already after this transition has taken place. What did it look like before? Kadesh, Rachza, Matzi Matza, Magid, sorry, no, Matzi Matza, Maror, Pesach, Shulchan Aruch, Magid. We could work it through, but it doesn't make any sense. So it's not like one by one they instituted these changes in order to encourage questions. It's a single event that so rocked the world, which was the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the removal of the Korban Pesach. They now had to take the Korban Pesach and the Shulchan Aruch and move it to the end because Magid now took, right? It's a mitzvah. It's the only mitzvah d'oraisa left, together with matzah. So now that comes first. But by leaving everything intact, it kept us almost like a zecher l'mikdash. It's a reminder of what we're missing. And that needs to be the motif of the Seder, the reminder of what we're missing. I mean, the Manishtana is the classic example. Manishtana, we talk about things we never saw. Because at the time of the Mishnah, they did see them. They ate them. They were done. And then they had the Manishtana. We left it intact with a single question, with a single answer. The Beit HaMikdash, the Korban Pesach, it was missing. The order of the Seder was reversed. Beautiful. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the presentation. I know we've gone over our time. Please, you have the source pages. You're welcome to go through it. If you have any questions, feel free to send me an email, and I will put my email in the chat.
Rabbi, feel free this is to...
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I hope you have a wonderful, meaningful Seder, and that hopefully this will shed some light on the significance of the Seder. My Seder, my kids know this already by heart for many, many, many years.
So, thank you, Rabbi.
When the base of it was good, we brought the Paschal out, we shecked it, you know, we brought the lamb. Did we did it in the temple, then we went home and had the Seder at home, or what happened?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So there's a whole discussion about Yerushalayim. People used to come to Yerushalayim, but more or less, you can only have the Korban Pesach if you started in the Beit HaMikdash.
Right. Okay.
Thanks. All right. For those who are not, who didn't get the source page for whatever reason, I'm going to repost the source page here. It might have been posted before you came on the call, so you're welcome to download it. Or if you email it to me, well, you should be able to download the PDF. It's the original of all the sources that I shared.
So this whole focus
thank you very much
on the base of Mikdash, points to the cup of Eliyahu, you know, and why it's so significant and very, very good, Rabbi. This is amazing. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was really something.
Something special, yeah.
Your insights are so wonderful. Yeah.
Very enlightening. Thank you.
Yeah, and sources, just a blessing. Thank you.
All right.
Thank
enjoy. And if you want to join us for the rest of Daniel after Pesach, you're welcome to.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Is the Chiddush that you told us basically Mordechai Breuers?
Yes.
Where is it published?
So in the source page, on the footnote of the first page, I put the source.
Okay. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. It's a very long article. It's about 40 pages in Hebrew, but it's a... goes through much more detail than I could do in an hour, but it's really an extraordinary piece.
You know, he was my teacher when I was in Keren Vyavne.
I am jealous. He was really extraordinary.
It's absolutely typical Mordechai Breuer.
Yeah, brilliant. Just amazing. All right. Have a wonderful Pesach, everybody. Enjoy.
Thank you. Do you think
the Mordechai would have agreed with Breuer?
I mean, I think the more about the rest of it, about the Seder as a whole.
Would they have agreed with Breuer's interpretation of Mordechai's?
Would who have agreed?
Would Mordechai himself?
Can I leave?
Yeah.
I can only imagine. I would have to assume. I mean, the Mordechai very clearly states that the sequence of the Seder was reversed. whether that's the answer to all of the questions about Kadesh, Yakira, Tinokot, V'Yishalu, I would assume he was. He doesn't discuss it, but it's reasonable to assume. And once you understand that the order of the Seder was reversed, then everything else falls into place.
And why do you think the Mordechai was ignored, forgotten, until Breyer came along, God invented Breyer?
Well, let's put it this way. The Mordechai's Chiddush is a big Chiddush. Not everybody agrees with it.
It doesn't matter. It is an answer which one should consider, even if one doesn't like it.
For sure.
It's amazing that I learned it from you. I should have known it.
My pleasure. All right, folks, we're past our time. I'm going to end the call. Enjoy the rest of.